Welcome to Directions Media's Hallway Conversations, an interview series with geospatial insiders and outsiders. This is Adina Schutzberg. Our first hallway conversation was recorded October 5th, 2009, at the Location Intelligence Conference in Westminster, Colorado. I managed to find a few minutes to talk to Carl Reed of the Open Geospatial Consortium. I'm joined by Carl Reed from the OGC. He is the CTO, the Chief Technical Officer, and the Executive Director of the Specification Program. Carl, thanks for joining me today.
We're happy to, Adina.
Okay, now we've worked together off and on for the last couple of years. I was a consultant to the OGC. And one of the things that's still spinning in my head that I don't know the status of is KML and ISO.
KML and ISO. Okay. Well, KML was brought into the OGC standards process a couple of years ago by Google because even though it was a de facto standard, the perception was it was owned by Google so they could change it at any time.
Which they could, really.
Which
it wasn't just a perception, it was actually true.
Right. And so they brought it into the OGC to put it into a community process, international community, and all the intellectual property and everything was turned over to the OGC. KML is what we call an implementation standard. And much of the work in ISO has traditionally been in what they call abstract models or abstract standards, like what is a geometry model and how do you specify a geometry model. KML, currently there's no talk of submitting KML into the ISO standards process. Whenever we do submit something to ISO TC211 from the OGC, it's because the members decide to do it. And there's a good reason to do it.
Okay, so this could happen, it just hasn't been a push for it.
Yeah, it could happen. For example, web map service and geography markup language are both ISO standards because, number one, the European community wanted them to be ISO standards, so they provided resources and so forth to do it. KML is a little different because it came in as a broadly implemented de facto standard. Most people don't see the need to make it an ISO standard.
Someone says it doesn't even need the stamp of approval.
It doesn't need the stamp of approval. Right.
Exactly. Okay, good. Thanks for clarifying that. I really was a little fuzzy on that. Now, what else is going on at OGC that people should know about?
Well, there are a number of areas that are seeing increased interest. The first area I'll address is what we call the scientific community research and scientific community collaboration environment. And what's happened is groups like hydrology and meteorology domains, and most recently the aviation domain, have come into the OGC process because they see it as it's the process they're interested in as much as the standards. We provide, through our policies and procedures, a process where disparate groups from many organizations, many countries, many regions, different cultures can come together and collaborate in a common sandbox where the processes are well-defined. So most recently, the members formed the hydrology domain working group and the meteorology domain working group. And now there's talk about an aviation domain working group. And what they do is they talk about, as groups, requirements for interoperability, information models required for their communities, and then how to use OGC standards in their communities. And they're looking at developing best practice guidance for each of those communities is how to use OGC standards. And ultimately, in every one of them, it's about increasing the ability to share information in their communities and between those communities. So there's a huge amount of activity right now.
So that's very different than what went on initially. It was first the OGC community had to come together and create these very generic standards, right? Which weren't aimed at solving any particular discipline or domain problem. And now what's happening that those are nice and set and reasonably well used, now the individual
domains, disciplines
are coming forward and saying.
Right.
So are these companies that we might have heard of or organizations?
It's government organizations, universities. For example, in hydrology, it all started in discussions between the OGC and QASI. And QASI is a community group for hydrology standards. They developed something called WaterML. But there are other groups out there that weren't interested in QASI, which was a university consortium. There were government organizations in Europe and in Asia interested in hydrology, so they needed a common place to come together and talk. Meteorology is a collaboration between multiple meteorological bureaus from different countries, the World Meteorological Organization, WMO, the OGC. There's actually an MOU now between WMO and the OGC to work collaboratively on standards for the meteorological community. Oceans has been included in that, so we have a really good collaboration going on for the Oceans Observing Community.
So the OGC is sort of becoming the center of bringing all these disparate groups, many from very specialized areas, together, going through this process. And it sounds like the output, the end product for them is going to be more best practices and white paper kinds
best
of things.
White papers, best practices, change requests to existing standards if they identify weaknesses. Both meteorology and Oceans is already doing this. They're running an interoperability experiment, looking at sensor observation service, and they're coming up with all kinds of interesting use cases. And meteorology wants to do this, and hydrology is going to run two interoperability experiments to test OGC standards against their requirements for sharing information.
So is this was this something that OGC expected was going to happen? You know, as it matured, to me, this is kind of like a new...
No, 10 years ago, the OGC members said, let's concentrate on the abstract standards and some interface standards, and we just don't have the domain expertise to get into these information domains. But over the last few years, that's really changed. With the membership coming up on 400 different members, there's a really diverse community of interests, and now that we're getting into these... collaboration domains for hydrology, meteorology, oceans, aviation, we're bringing in new members to deal with the guts of the core standards. They can worry about how do you use them to enhance interoperability. So that whole collaboration thing has really grown in the last few years. Another big area of interest is 3D information management. 3D information models, how do you share 3D information? The first big standard that came out of the OGC is CityGML. Maybe not heard of too much here in the United States, but broadly implemented in Europe.
In Europe. Now, that has a connection to BIM? Or how is that connected to BIM? Maybe the better way to ask the question.
You can translate from BIM industry foundation classes into CityGML, but CityGML is specifically designed to share urban modeling information. It's not specifically designed to share peer architecture information, which is what BIM is.
Is CGML, is it fair to say it's more outside the building and the building next to your building?
Yeah, building exteriors and the relationships. One of the neat things about CityGML, for example, unlike IFC, is you can say that a window or a door is associated with a given wall and that there are properties of the door. It opens inwards, it opens outwards. And you can have multiple levels of detail in CityGML, just like in BIM. So you can get very coarse and you can get very fine-grained. The other thing that CityGML lets you do is define the topography, which they call level zero. So you can actually have terrain associated with the buildings, and everything is geolocated, unlike some of these other 3D
Right, when
languages.
The buildings are in space
and they're just
somewhere.
In space. You know, it's an arbitrary.
And sometimes they're in the ground and shouldn't be.
So there's that whole work. And then we're getting ready to start a new activity with CityGML to enhance it for underground utilities and floor plans in building.
Oh, so it is moving inside.
It's moving inside. The reason it's moving inside is primarily being driven by navigation, requirements for pedestrian navigation and emergency services.
So emergency services need to be able to get inside the building and get to what the problem is.
Right.
That's interesting, since there's a startup that just, I think it was a demo, that wants to do the mapping inside. There will be Google Maps inside the building.
Right.
So it sounds like it's sort of in that same space. I ran across last week an announcement about an augmented reality markup language.
I know Mike Liebold, a question to the GRSS discussion list about what's the relationship of all this
special
stuff,
and
should there be a relationship between augmented reality? Another interesting question that's come up is what is the relationship between what we're doing in the gaming industry?
And that's a question I've had forever. I've been waiting for us to both be at the GIS and gaming conference.
Together,
those two groups come together because there's so much overlap.
With augmented reality.
I guess, yeah.
I should mention that there are some OGC members in Europe that are doing things with OGC standards in certain types of augmented reality.
So there is some.
Primarily for visualization, scientific and collaborative visualization.
Okay, so that could go somewhere. Yeah. What about the gaming people? Are any of those folks...
We've had some discussions with the Collada folks. Collada does have some geolocation stuff built in, but it's fairly basic.
Yeah.
But I came out of the gaming industry, Collada. And a lot of people are doing things like mapping CityGML into Collada or CityGML into X3D. Because CityGML is an encoding. It's not a visualization.
Right.
So you need something else to actually...
To draw the pretty picture.
To draw the pretty pictures.
Right. Hey, so, you mentioned the GORSS the discussion group. What's going on with GORSS?
It's all over the place. You don't hear much about it anymore because it's just become part of the fabric of the Web 2.0 infrastructure.
Well, I'm going to challenge you on that. Because one of the things I do in my class, that you actually helped me review some material for, I appreciate that, is I have my students go out and try to find implementations, and they have to find a client and a server or a source of the format. And they came back to me and said, gee, it's really hard to find.
Yeah, it's hard to find because, for example, Google's implemented it, Microsoft's implemented it, Yahoo's sort of implemented it. They have their own.
Which is a different flavor, if I remember right.
Totally different flavor. Twitter is going to implement it with their geolocation stuff that they've announced. The reason you don't see it is it's embedded in one of their own silos of information processing. It's not exposed to some outside application. It's how they're doing things inside.
Internally.
It's just the way they implemented it. So if you go out to find an aggregator that understands GORSS, you're probably not going to find one unless it's part of some other infrastructure deployed by some other...
Now, is that going to change? I mean, I guess with Twitter making it part of their API, that to me should be kind of a watershed.
And Flickr implements it. And so there are a whole lot of people that implement it as part of their application suite. And a lot of them are actually doing not just simple, but GML. And you never hear about that.
No, and again, I think it's because it's hidden.
It's hidden.
Right.
They're using it for internal messaging and... And, you know, when you say, like with Flickr, you say I'm going to geolocate my thing and then broadcast it. Well, Flickr's doing everything internally for you.
Right, so you would know what kind of form that was. Anything else you want to mention?
I attended InterGeo last week.
That's that huge...
It's a trade fair and conference in Germany. It lasts 3 days. There were 16,000 attendees.
That's right. It's this big, huge thing that we don't have anything like it over here.
I was going to say, I wish we had something like that in North America because, I mean, obviously there is a real need for the domain specific, but when you get into the horizontal community, InterGeo is equivalent of ERISA, ASPRS, GITA, a whole bunch of them all bundled together. And you go to one place for 3 days, and you get to network with everybody. They had about 350 exhibitors, so it was a great opportunity for me to see what our members in Europe are doing with OGC standards. So that was really...
Did something stand out that you saw there?
Yeah, there was some... Fraunhofer's done some really neat things in terms of sensor systems and integration of different disparate sensors into warning systems for things like landslides and other geohazards. They've integrated it in special hardware using OGC standards into the infrastructure for real-time collaboration with deployed field units. I saw a demonstration of real-time access to raw city GML data using a Game Boy with a car. You could drive through the city, and it was displaying directly out of a city GML database.
Why are they so much? It always seems like they're much further ahead in Europe. Or is it because of Inspire and the initiatives?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with Inspire. But the other thing I was thinking about over lunch was why is the U.S. in some areas, when we started so much in the geospatial technology domain, lagging other countries now? I think in Canada, Europe, Australia, what we're seeing in Asia is we're seeing policy statements coming out of the government at the federal level or the pan-national level in the case of Europe, driving a lot of this. We just don't have it.
Not yet.
In the United States. So I think that may have a lot to do with it, because if you look at the uptake of OGC standards around the world, many organizations in the U.S. are implementing OGC standards, but not to the extent of other nations. And I think it's because policy needs
to catch up.
And maybe we'll see it with what's going on in Washington right now. Because there's great value in standards, one of which is that it reduces costs, it increases opportunity.
Which are all things that the government wants. I appreciate your time, and that covers an awful lot of what's going on.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Dana.
You have been listening to an interview with Carl Reed, CTO and Executive Director of the Specification Program at the Open Geospatial Consortium. We invite your comments and questions at Directions Magazine and All Points Blog, or you can contact us at editors@directionsmag.com. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.